Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akiu, and have you ever seen an organization deliver feature after feature after feature in their software with seamlessly no issues? I have, and you do that with mature software delivery, which is exactly what we cover today. Joining me today is Elias Nogueira, and it was a real blast learning from his way of working, what quality is in software, as well as how to collaborate with the product. Enjoy! Beyond coding. I was going to say, I just joined recently a new client, and the person there, the product manager, and he also did most of the Scrum Master rituals, his preference was really having a physical board. So then when kind of a sprint cycle changed, then everyone would be in the office. And I agree with that. I think that has my preference as well. And there was one problem still, because we had people that would either join remotely and then a physical board doesn't work. As soon as it hit hybrid, there were pain points, because then it's like, yeah. Oh, what do you want me to put on the physical board? Like, it didn't work anymore.
Yeah.
So that, I thought that was funny.
Yeah. When I was working in the previous company before I moved here, we had a lot of teams like initially doing Scrum, and for them to learn in the process and like visualize that was like really the best decision, doing this like in a formal way, like with stickers, and everything, so they can like, okay, they can understand the flow. They are actually doing something. I don't know if like probably learn a little bit faster, like by doing things instead of just like creating some abstraction.
Yeah.
And it was really easy, because after a while they like, okay, they were mastered. It's not that difficult, but yeah, it's good, because as well, like, it's not just like that stand-up meeting that you just talk, but you talk and do something, and you talk about, you get a sticker note and talk about the sticker note. This is the thing. Yeah, this is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's just different than you are in online with a board, like, okay, talking about the tasks. It's completely different.
Yeah.
But it's the nowadays.
We have to ish.
Yeah.
I almost forgot about that. Like when I first learned about Scrum and that way of working, I love the physical board. It made so much sense to me. And we could do that because everyone was in the same room.
Yeah.
Now with that history, I can do it digitally, and we know kind of that routine and that way of working. But yeah, people coming into it and then just staring at a digital board, I think that is kind of the loss of magic.
Yeah. And it's different, like, because we are seated all the time. So, okay, let me check the board. It's just a different tab.
Yeah.
Physically, you stand up, you go there, you think, okay, you're thinking more. You ask someone to join, and okay, what do you think about this and that? So, yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have to ask a person to move it. You can actually go and you move the thing yourself. You're like, I do it. People move their stuff.
Yeah,
I love that. Are you there to, or have you facilitated those sessions as well when it comes to either a planning or a retro?
Yeah.
Do you like facilitating?
I like facilitating. Yeah. And the way, like, for me, I work at some point with an agile coach.
Yeah.
But more for technically in this way, not for all the framework and formalities, but more, okay, let's try to combine. That is, for me, is the real agile. Let's combine what the frameworks does with the technical part. How we can technically now can do those things in a agile way with some technical practice.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was doing, I was the only one during the planning session. I was like, guys, we will have 1 day planning session. The time slot will be the whole day.
Okay.
And we will just stop when we have everything. If you don't have everything, the next day we will plan again. Why is that? Because for me, time boxed plannings are not that good. We can have refinement sessions, etc. But if you have everyone thinking about all the possibilities together, like without interruptions, it's better and it's faster, actually, than you breaking down in like different refinements, then a planning session, then you start. So after a while, in the beginning, wasn't wasn't good enough, because the whole day was tiring and we were distracting a lot. But after a while, most of the people understand this.
Yeah.
And they can, like, of course, like taking 2-3 hours and it's done.
I like that a lot.
They have everything. They talk about all the problems, possible problems, edge cases, and everything. So everything, basically.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Just to play devil's advocate, did you see that people would get drained during that kind of 1 day?
Sure. After 3-4 hours max, they are, Jesus Christ. Yeah, let's do any other thing.
Yeah. But they would stick with it and they would reap the benefits.
Yeah. Few teams did it with me, actually, but the teams that stick with it, like they really saw the benefit.
I like that a lot. I might try that out. What we have now is I'm coming into a role and I'm taking up that facilitation mantle, And I like the idea of looking at what's there first and then being like, okay, how can we change this and how can we prove this and how can we try things out like a dedicated day and we go until we're finished? Because from a focus perspective, I like that. Otherwise, okay, you're going to switch and you're going to start working and then you have to get back into refinement mode. And what did we discuss again? And that's all going to take extra time. So I really like that dedicated focus approach.
But do you have this as well as a facilitator? Mm. Sometimes you see some problems. The guys are not seeing the problem. You're seeing the problem. At some point, you need to tell them, guys, this is a problem no one is seeing. Is that true or not? So they, we forgot about it. Yeah. Forgot about it. Sometimes I do this. Not sometimes a lot. I do this a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I'm facilitating, like, I try more doing facilitation than more like mentoring because it's different. It's a different approach.
Okay.
Yeah. You get more people involved instead of like coaching and mentoring individually.
Yeah.
In initiatives that I'm running, I'm trying to be the facilitator all the time instead of like telling the guys, this is the direction, this is what we need to do, etc. What is your opinion? So instead of me seeing what their opinion first, I was giving all the possible cases. It's good. Let's say it really depends, right? It really depends the seniority of people you have, the team you have. But what I'm learning nowadays, to hear more from them, and then I can give them, okay, this is a missing piece you guys are forgetting, etc.
Yeah.
So, but for me, it's still difficult. So I still want as a facilitator to give them the answers, you know?
Of course. You have to hold yourself back.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I really like facilitating is because I get the best, I get kind of the best experience understanding everything. If I'm not facilitating, I feel like I just do my part of the work and I explain that and I understand what others are doing, but not into the detail of when I'm facilitating that type of stuff. Doesn't matter whether it's a retrospective. I feel like in a retro, I really get a sense of the team as a whole, or it's a planning or it's a stand-up even. I get better insights. That's why I like facilitating. And because of that, I don't want to hoard that just with me. So then I think maybe other people want to do it. If they don't, then I'll gladly take it. Yeah. But it does come with maturity. And then even so, I feel like not everyone likes facilitating. Like even the most senior engineers, they don't really mind if someone else facilitates. Like it's not a thing that goes hand in hand necessarily. It can, but it doesn't have to.
And there's a funny thing. I believe like some companies have this approach to, they have the team.
Mm.
And any different way of facilitating for everything, they are rotating. And this is one of the worst options ever because you maybe will force someone that doesn't want to do that or not that good and wants to focus in another thing.
Yeah.
So if you get the people that, okay, in the team, I can see one or two that likes facilitating, let's stick to it. Instead of like having everyone create these opportunities for everyone. Sometimes they don't want to focus on that and focus on other things. So it's tricky, right?
It could be maybe the people that have had that, it's either the fair approach, so everyone does it, so it's fair for everyone, or then no one wants to do it, so then we make it all equal, so then it's equal participation. It's like one of those. But I agree with you. If one person really likes doing it, I like doing it, then let that person do it.
Yeah.
People will be happier doing what they love.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to cover mainly kind of mature software delivery with you, and I think we already sliced open way of working. I think everyone has kind of their own way of working, things that they've seen in the past and things that they're going to bring with them in the future in ways of working. But especially when you come together as a new team or an existing team, if you don't have a way of working yet, there's going to be opinions conflicting. When you say, I want a dedicated day because I've seen that work best. And other people are like, no, that's going to drain me. I want fragmented things and stuff like that. From your experience, how do you usually consolidate into like a team way of working that is really effective for that team?
What I think, my context now, I have 14 teams.
Mm.
So for me, like I need to have a bare minimum process set for all the teams. So I need the same way of working for some aspects, let's say in the development process, equally, like distributed equally and done in the same way.
Yeah.
So I know, like I can predict if they have an issue. The main benefit that I'm telling them is they can help each one in different things, like 100 people can help each one. Because when you have a problem, everyone is doing the same thing in that way.
Yeah.
So they can help each other little more faster actually, than if they are doing a different way. So the guys need to stop, analyze, and we spend a little bit more time.
Okay.
But you could say to me that, okay, this would break like somehow the innovation or bring up like bring to the process new process, new approaches, new aspects. But for me, bare minimum process established.
Mm.
Then you open up for teams to do this differently.
Okay.
And of course, you need to give them time to do this differently. Even though it's that process is working, and one team thinks, okay, this process might be done differently, I would say, okay, do this in your team first. Do a POC, runs it, and then share the experience. Other people, other engineers will evaluate, will ask questions, etc. And if you see that it's beneficial, instead of rolling out to everyone, let's adopt to more 2, 3, 4 teams.
Yeah, gradually.
And then, we roll out to everyone. But I believe like being open and have this opportunity to have this freedom to change things is the main aspect.
Yeah.
Of course, because otherwise we would work like for years doing the same boring stuff, let's say, in this sense, right? And there will be no innovation because you are doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
But like the set of bare minimum process for me is good.
Yeah.
But open to everyone to try out anything they want.
I really like that.
I had a problem in one of the teams that we were doing this. One team wasn't doing like this.
Okay. Not even the bare minimum?
Not even the bare minimum because the main engineer in that team was saying, okay, I have better ways to do it.
Mm.
Oh, of course we know. And that engineer was really smart. And okay, first, why would you like try... We were saying like try first doing what all the teams are doing.
Yeah.
Then you apply what you're suggesting in your team. So you can prove like in this way, you can prove that it's working. There's a lot of benefits, but no, I will do my way. My way is the same.
Yeah.
Okay. The end goal will be the same. We will deliver software in the same way.
Mm.
But in the end, he were doing like in a super over-engineered way.
Mm. Okay.
That he had the same results, sometimes even faster, but the cost for that was higher in terms of development.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm thinking it's like proving to the other teams actually nowadays that, okay, it's not good if you try to do everything alone.
Mm.
And if you don't follow the bare minimum process, you need to follow bare minimum process first and then you bring like to the table new things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that approach, especially from you overseeing those teams and then helping when it's necessary. Even teams co-creating and collaborating and helping each other when it's necessary. As long as we have the same bare minimum, then you know the processes that are in place.
Yeah.
And you can adapt to anything that is new that's built on top of that.
Yeah.
Could you give like an overview of the bare minimum you're talking about?
In terms of what we do nowadays in the end-to-end process, in a super short way, we do have like we start with developing an API with like the services with unit testing, integration tests. In the integration test part, we divide in two different areas: the integration between the service and the mocks, and we have the database part as well.
Yeah.
So instead of doing this any database upgrade, migration, etc., we do have this integration layer because we have all the scripts, everything we know, everything that will be changing in advance. So we do this in the integration layer as well. Mm. So when we run the full set before we merge anything, we run the integration tests for all the supported database, for all the tests we do have in parallel, so to minimize the time. And then we run all those database migrations, upgrades, etc. just when we have one, of course, just to prove, okay, everything is fine. Mm. So we can go to the next step. Next step for us, we have somehow we call it capability testing, but it's the end-to-end API test. Mm-hmm. So we deploy an environment, an ephemeral environment, and then we run the same, not the same set of tests, but the tests without the mocks, but with the real integration.
Yeah.
We exclude the mocks, we put a real service there communicating with each other, then we test that part.
Yeah.
And basically we are doing all the front-end scenarios that the user would do. We are doing through the APIs.
Perfect.
Because nowadays, like everyone, like a front-end web or mobile consumes those APIs. If I guarantee that I'm testing this through the API layer and there is no issue, probably there will be no issue in the front-end when the user, like as a user, I would use that.
Yeah.
And that then we have the set of tests in the front-end.
Mm.
But in the front-end, it's same as the back-end, unit integration, then this part without mocks. which we have the environment with the front end and we can test things.
Yeah.
But the number of tests we have in this last part in the end-to-end is far way less than the API layer.
Exactly.
Because we try to balance those things.
Yeah.
And we know that we spend a lot of time in the front end because it's flaky. It's difficult to spin up an environment. Not difficult to spin up an environment with the front end, but it's more time consuming because you need the front end. You need to interact with the front end. It's not that fast than the API itself.
Yeah.
You need to do the flows. You need to wait for each page or each interaction. So it takes more time.
Yeah, built
and
up.
And we need to be really smart on which type of test and kind of test we add there.
Yeah, I really like that. It gives kind of a great overview of the quality and the baseline that is there. And then teams probably built on top of that based on new functionality that comes in.
Yeah, and for example, like before, this part with the database, we had after the full end-to-end APIs. And we were thinking, okay, but we have all the technology to do this beforehand, to do this integration layer.
Yeah.
So we started something, we call it like that. We have the shift left testing approach, that everything that we can shift left, like at the beginning of the process, not only technically like writing code, but anything, any practice, we start earlier instead of start later. And we start a technical approach on the shift left testing, like seeing, okay, what everything we can do to shift left. And we saw like two things. One was this database migration and upgrade and everything. And another, like in this end-to-end API test, we were doing a single calls to the API instead of test integration. So, okay, this doesn't belong here. This should be before.
Yeah.
So we start in this, and actually we could reduce a lot the whole full cycle of testing because, we are doing tests like faster and all the time. So we can get the issues first in advance. And then we focus on what we use, let's say, the customer's focus perspective or customer tests or anything like this. Like, okay, I will think, act like a customer, and I will apply those tests in an end-to-end way.
Yeah, the actual user journeys.
User journeys,
way. Yeah, perfect. Has there ever been a way, or not really a way, a scenario where people would cut corners, basically, in that testing suite? Because as new functionality comes in, and especially with pressure from the business to deliver, people might think that delivering the software without tests or without accommodating for integration or user journeys is faster. But obviously, you and I know that for the long term, it's actually quite harmful.
I'm blessed that in this current company, the product people knows the benefits of doing this first.
Yeah.
So they really knows. And actually, they ask when they are running the sprints. And everything that the quality engineer does, like we have quality engineers, backend and front-enders. So, and they work in a, they distribute the load.
Yeah.
So during the planning sessions, they talk, okay, those acceptance criteria, this one will be done in the front-end, in the back-end integration layer only. There will be no end-to-end test for that.
Okay.
But this and that, we will have end-to-end tests. And they start development at the same time. So quality engineers start at the same time as the development. So even there is no, like, let's say, they start one day behind, basically, right? Because like when they start, okay, there is nothing to do in the quality part. But as soon as they have some code, they start together with the backend developers or front-end developers doing this.
Yeah.
And we start in full in a full automation like mode in this way. We almost don't do manual tests.
Okay.
Only few verifications in the front-end.
Yeah.
And we focus more on test automation because we know all the benefits. And actually the product managers, product owners, they during this sprint, they check, okay, are you doing the automation for this feature? Because they know that like you do one time and then you have the benefit later.
Yeah, then they don't have to do it.
Exactly, yeah. And this was a problem as well. Because everything basically is automated and they were not doing like the, we call it PO check. This is good because they were trusting the team, that the team's doing this and testing, everyone is testing this. But at some point it's good to have the owner of the product, like taking a look at the product before we can deliver, instead of after, because it was happening after. After we we was delivering the process, the project itself, the product owner, few days later, okay guys, but this like this should be changed, that should be changed, but okay, we just delivered that.
Yeah,
you are in another iteration, so why you are like the too late? It's too late.
Yeah, what happened?
And we have this of course discussions with the PO. So now nowadays they can see this benefit, of course. They need to see during the development process how the software is being built. And I believe this is a it's my personal opinion, it's kind of a general problem because some POs, I believe, are not that involved during the development cycle. They want to see the final product.
Like a stakeholder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not during the development cycle.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Because if you're creating the tests, let's say on an end-to-end perspective or on a user flow perspective, your assumptions or how you think the world works is going to also be in there. And if the PO trusts that what they think is right, everyone thinks is right, then you have no issues. But that's really hard to achieve. Like, that's almost impossible. That's why you always need kind of that second pair of eyes, that sanity check to go over it. And especially from the PO role, that is just the responsibility that lies there. So then to do it as a stakeholder instead of kind of during, that if you don't do it during, you don't get the ability to steer left or right. And then you do it after, like any other stakeholder.
Yeah. And sometimes they are like, at least in our process, they are creating this idealization first with the designers. Mm. And then they can see the software, but they cannot touch. They can see all the designs, everything. And they are imagining, okay, yeah, all the mockups. Okay, this might work.
Mm.
Because it's they create this idealization of the project, of the feature. Of course, they know everything. But it's different when you start using it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so all you assumptions.
Get all the benefits you get when they start using it. They start having a second thought. Okay, this is not that good as I was imagining using the mockup, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. The pain points arise when you actually fiddle around with the tool. And stuff pops up. It will always pop up in development after, like, it's... I think it's inherent. And as long as you take kind of this iterative approach that whatever we have can still adapt in the future, I think is better.
There are two things that I always say is that there are two things that will never change.
Mm.
PO will change something later. And when they are experimenting, of course, because they can change their mind as well, of course.
Yeah.
This is one. And second, we will all the time deliver some issues.
Mm.
It's impossible to deliver no issues. We aim to it, but we deliver.
Yeah.
So if we start thinking about it and we start to, okay, being fine with that, the whole development process, the interactions with everyone will be easier.
Yeah, it gets easier. I've never, because I heard you mention that before, I've never worked with specifically the term quality engineers within my team. Do you think that's a great way of working when you mentioned front and back end and then separate quality engineers?
Yeah, I've been like working this term, not working this term because that is determined the market.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm truly believe in, at least I'm following my teams and I influence in my teams, that you have a group of software engineers.
Yeah.
Back end, front end, and quality. So a quality engineer is also a software engineer. It's not like that we know from the past, like a tester that does do more manual testing than another thing. No, it's a software engineer that knows software engineering, knows a little bit of programming, backend and front end, and nowadays like knows a little bit of DevOps, but his specialization is quality.
Yeah.
Like a backend. But the backender knows testing, knows DevOps, knows a little bit of something.
Yeah.
The same for quality engineers. The quality engineers for me is like the software engineers with quality specialization. And from company to company, it depends. So the where is the focus, right? So in some companies, more towards the front end. In some companies, more towards the back end.
Yeah.
Some companies are more DevOps. In our case, it's a mix of everything. So because like we have this quality engineer to advise the other engineers in the way of quality and where we should, like if we need to add more tests, we are missing some edge cases, more techniques, we can do it faster.
Mm.
But also helping them to create those test automation.
Yeah.
Sometimes not creating itself, because sometimes the backend developer needs to create all the integration tests, but we are looking at the tests and say, okay, guys, this test is the test that we have defined it, but it's not covering everything we should cover.
Mm.
So they can double check and they can like pass this, do this mentoring part in quality to all the developers.
Yeah.
And for me, like this is the way that all the quality guys should do like nowadays.
Mm.
I really think that everyone should be an engineer in position. We are adding to the titles, right? DevOps engineer, backend engineer,
so
etc. Yeah, but we need this engineering part, the basic of engineering. And this is something missing a little bit in the quality area because we have still this quality people working more towards to the product as well sometimes. Yeah. and working more in the front end part, not in the back end, or different aspects that are important for the product.
Yeah, the ones I've seen more from history, and that I'm talking 5+ years ago, would only test indeed like a regression test from a user perspective. So go through all the flows, click and drag basically. And then after each iteration, after each sprint delivery, do that again and then again. And then throughout the years, I've seen that evolve into automation. And then as you say, I do see that component of quality more so being prevalent more and more within engineering. The only part it was where I didn't really understand was what a quality engineer does. But now that you explained it, it's still hand in hand, right? With a focus on quality, but engineering as a core.
Yeah.
And I think with that explanation, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And there's a second thing, like the market still thinks that the quality engineers or quality people needs to be more in the product side.
Okay.
And I disagree.
Okay. I also disagree, I think, yeah.
Any engineer should know about the product.
Absolutely.
Not the quality engineer with the product owner. Everyone needs to understand equally the product so we can better develop that product. If we think like, no, let's try to create this separation. Quality engineers will do the front-end testing, manual automated, and we'll talk more to the PO about the features and see all the edge cases. This is in the end of the process.
Yeah.
We should bring to the, like, we should push to the left, the shift left testing or shift left mentality, and then we, like, together with the PO, everyone should understand the product, and then we can build the product in a better way.
Yeah, interesting. As kind of a thought experiment, have you seen, let me take a step back. For me, when there's more roles and responsibilities, when people get a title like DevOps, front-end, back-end, they put themselves more so in this box.
Yeah.
And then when work pops up, work gets basically grabbed based on those boxes, if it's front-end or back-end, but then what slips through is the work that's kind of in the middle. So especially when you have a new role like quality engineering, have you seen people say, oh, that's kind of their job and I don't do that? Or how do they still kind of cooperate and get stuff done? Because those titles, they sometimes do make a difference.
Yeah. And the most common behavior or bad behavior is that when you have a quality, when you have a specialized engineers, right? Yeah. Back end, front end, and quality. If you don't have the good mentality or quality mentality across the team, the back ender will see the word test. It's quality engineer job.
Yeah, just scooch it that
front
way.
End will say, okay, we need to test something in the front end. We have a quality engineer for that.
Yeah.
And they are just like not doing actually their job that they should do.
Mm.
And should be in cooperation. That's why we divide the work there.
Yeah.
Those kind of things like integration, it's a core for each engineer. Like the back-end engineer knows how to do integration. The front-end knows. The quality engineer shouldn't be involved of creating it, but reviewing it and talk to them and say, okay, are we covering all the possible cases? Let's talk together. Let's see, because this is the shift left.
Yeah.
And then, okay, what is more end-to-end or has more integration or any kind of test like performance test or accessibility testing or any kind of like non-functional test, we can give it to the quality engineers and they can help the team to deliver this. Because they have more, like they have more knowledge on that. So
it's that's their focus.
What makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think. Have you ever been in a situation? Because especially you mentioned quality engineers advise, but with the role of an advisor, people can also say, well, we take that advice, but we still do this, and that can have consequences. And then I think your culture is kind of make or break there. Because if it's a culture of blame and I told you so, that's very harmful.
No, yeah, it's not a culture of blame.
Yeah.
Thankfully, all the teams are super cool in this way.
That's good.
But this happens sometimes.
Yeah, right.
But we most of the time we send like reminders. So, the team decided that we won't do this and that, or we would add one or two edge cases. It's fine.
Yeah.
But normally we see the problems later. We see one like later, not in the next iteration, but like months later. And we are just setting a reminder, guys, we discussed about it and we didn't do.
Yeah.
So let's try to next time, let's try to implement. It will take like more 10 minutes, 15 minutes, doesn't matter, but we can prove that we take less time. Now we are discussing more than 10 minutes just because we didn't do this before.
Yeah.
And there's the second thing for me in the terms of teams. It's not fully related to quality, but it's also related to quality. It's giving them this opportunity to, okay, I don't want to do it, don't see the benefit. Okay, let's don't do it.
Mm.
And if we fail, we fail. We learn with that failure. We see what we can improve, and then we improve later.
Yeah.
So this culture of like more culture of failure for me, it's really good. Not because you won't deliver anything, but like allow them to fail in interactions and try to see the problems, you know, we try to find a solution. It's the best. It's so they can learn really, really fast.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard that more and more. And I feel like sometimes it's hard to put in practice, but I think the more people have that mindset of failing is okay and it's a way to learn and progress, I think it's like at the heart of engineering culture. Because what we do does not come without fail. Fail is always there. It's always going to be there.
Yeah.
You also mentioned we're going to deliver software and it will have issues. So if we accept that it has issues, we can accommodate for that. And we're not surprised when it actually does have issues because it will happen. I feel like that's very important for a team to kind of mature and also in their delivery. Yeah.
And even for people that never did something, we are saying, okay, do this. And they say, okay, maybe I will fail. Maybe this will be a problem for other teams. Do.
Mm.
If it's a problem, first, acknowledge the problem. Second, ask for help.
Yeah.
Then a lot of different engineers will jump in to help you. And this is what happens, actually.
That's great.
Because we have this kind of fear that, okay, we did a mistake. We need to hide ourselves first, right?
Yeah.
We need to talk to the team. Okay, I have this problem. Like, please help me to fix. But actually, if we allow ourselves to say, okay, guys, hey, I did this mistake. It was me. I'm sorry. But I need help to fix because I don't know how to fix. A lot of engineers will say, okay, yeah, it's a normal thing.
No problem.
No problem. Let's jump in and let's fix it.
Yeah.
And as soon as you allow this as well, and it changes your minds a little bit, right? Because most of the people don't want to show and say, okay, it was me.
Yeah, scary. No?
And when we allow this and people see, okay, I was sharing that it was me, no one blamed me.
Nothing happened.
And they are more comfortable doing these mistakes. And actually they will next time when they are doing, they have like a different opinion. Maybe this will fail.
Mm.
They are doing the same thing before. So they are going to the channels and say, guys, I will deliver this. I don't know if there's be a problem and not seeing it. Please help me.
Yeah.
The engineers will jump in the same way if they had the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that we covered and started with kind of way of working and then we dove more into the quality aspects of software. I think when we're talking about really mature software delivery, a big aspect is the collaboration between engineering and product and making sure that that is a smooth operation, that there's trust on both sides and that you can also deliver based on that with realistic expectations. I don't know where it sometimes goes wrong if the product side is kind of lacking that engineering mindset, or if the engineering side is kind of lacking that, let's say, functional requirement in the business mindset and the value that they need to deliver. I feel like it's always going to be somewhere in between. But I think I shared with you before, from my side now, I'm moving from engineering to product just to kind of experience that. And it is fun having seen kind of both sides and the pain points there. What are some of the pain points you've seen in the past?
Yeah, and it's both ways, right?
Yeah.
Because we don't actually, the main thing for me, it's the we don't know how to communicate between each other.
Yeah,
because both sides. Because all the jargons and everything is different. So we need to learn this like a new language to communicate first, and then we can not only the way they talk about the product or we talk about tech, but also understanding the keywords of the benefits.
Mm.
So for me, if you tell product people, okay, I have this, I cannot deliver this on time because this will impact X days in the process if I just take one more day to finalize all the things, this won't have this issue in the customer, which will stop the customer, preventing the customer using it, and maybe this will give them a loss of X millions or anything like this. They will get your attention. You have their attention.
It's their language.
If you, when you start like understanding their language, okay, customer, money, things like that, that actually product, right?
Yeah.
So okay, they will stop and they'll listen to you, and they will help you actually. And for me, the when I talk to product people, most of the time I talk about the problem. Of course, we have a problem. This is the problem. This is the context. I love like when I write some message to everyone, it's like a chapter.
Mm.
Like I give the context. I give what is happening. why that's happening, what are the possible solutions, what is the impact of that, and most important for product people, the impact.
Yeah.
And I say, guys, this is the impact, the risks, and I cannot take this risk alone. Mm-hmm. So it needs to help me to understand. And for me, in the end, product people have the decisions, of course, because it's product, and that's why there's a steering wheel for the company. So they know the direction, they know what the customer wants, etc.
Yeah.
The other problems we do have, it's this kind of fighting between each other.
Mm.
Because we don't understand each other, right? Yeah. So we are fighting. Why they are needs to change this? One classic thing. Product people in the middle of the iteration, the sprint, etc., they want to change something.
Yeah.
Or they want to add something in the middle.
Something urgent all of a sudden.
Yeah, but what we do, we complain.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, okay, sit with me, explain why this is good. Oh, but is this urgent? No. Okay, I understood. But explain me a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because maybe that requirement that the customer is telling to the product is not fully ready as well. So we need to understand as engineers first why that's happening, and then, okay, it makes sense. So let's stop what we are doing. Let's do this new thing.
Yeah.
To collaborate with product. In the same way, one of the not problems, but learnings we are having together there is that we have this tech versus product all the time. And most of the time, product people, they have their calendar, they backlog for like 3-6 months, 1 year, mm-hmm. like planet, right?
Yeah.
And but at some point, tech has a lot of things in the middle, not the development process, but we have upgrades, we have new approach we want to apply to reduce the time of development or to increase the quality, etc. And we need to start negotiating.
Yeah.
It will impact their backlogs. This is kind of a problem, but a good problem to solve as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this solves with communication and actually the proper communication. Just saying that is that important, you won't be listening.
No.
Because everything is important.
Everything is important.
But as soon as this is the benefits, this is the impact, this is the risk, they start listening to you again.
Yeah.
So, they try to understand. They will try to understand all the time. The problem is more this communication and how we can understand each other.
Yeah, I think the more we indeed focus on language, the better we can understand each other. And then it's at the end still about trust, right? If someone says no, you can still work and you can still commit, and you don't have to butt heads when people disagree. Because I think always that's within a team of engineers, and especially engineering and product, people will still disagree. And people will have a different vision on how we should move, or if we should move left or right, especially when it comes to product decisions. And at the end of the day, it's all assumptions anyway.
Yep.
And we will have to make decisions. And then if it turns out to be wrong, exactly as if how you would treat engineering when a mistake happens, you pivot. You say, okay, we've made a mistake. We've learned from that. You pivot and you go the other way. I feel like the more we realize that it is iterations, the more flexible you'll be as a team. What I'm struggling with still is people that kind of like that or that don't like that iteration. I feel like sometimes I've worked with engineering both in teams and from outside of the team working in, people that want to do one thing and then have it be right and then not have it be changed, basically. And that's really hard, I feel like, to achieve.
And I'm reading a little bit more about this topic, this product-minded engineers.
Mm.
That normally what we have in the teams, technical-minded engineers, right?
Yeah.
Because we see the feature or any change, we instantly start thinking about technically how we can approach that.
Yeah.
But we are not thinking, how the user will approach that, how the product will approach that, and then I will create the technical solution.
Mm-hmm.
So they are the product-minded. They will, why we are doing this?
Yeah.
For which customer? What are the benefits? Which way they are using? And then they start thinking about the solution. This, you can see this more in the architects, for example.
Mm.
When you talk to an architect, the architect normally will say, what the use case? What the user will do?
Yeah.
What are the non-functional requirements? Because they have this full experience on this. They know how to prevent this kind of problems.
Yeah.
But engineers in the teams don't have this.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we have trying to influence the engineers in the teams to think about the product first, then they can deep dive in the technical solution. Better.
No problem.
Yeah, better.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny because I'm now in that product seat and I'm looking back in my experiences. And as a personal preference, I always went for solutions I didn't have to build because I think that would be more valuable, right? The less code we have and the more problems we solve without kind of technical solutions, that's better because that gives us room to improve and to expand in the future without kind of having this weight of code. Because I feel like more code you have, it is kind of a weight. And at some point you can do things of standardization and accommodation, but it is still weighing you down in some degrees. So the less functionality and the less features you have, I think the faster you can keep going, because it at the end of the day, it's a marathon. But now that I'm in the product seat, I do see that, okay, even from design, when we see a problem, everyone loves coming up with solutions. We can do that, we can do that, and then that. And then people fixate on that. And I'm like, yeah, but is this really a problem we should be solving? Because not every problem, I feel like, needs to have a technical solution.
No.
And that's the realization, that I think a lot of engineers can do well with.
And I have these kind of discussions as well, because we try to follow indirectly the zero bug policy.
Mm.
When we deliver something, no issue should be delivered. If we find that issue, we fix, then we deliver.
Yeah.
But at the end, for me, I changed my mind in this way, because I was thinking all the time that, no, we should deliver with zero issues. But when we start talking to the product people and say, okay, we have this issue and we have this deadline.
Yeah.
And we need to deliver the software, this feature. What do you think? And they can give awesome insights. They will say, okay, this issue. 1% of the customers will hit this point.
Yeah.
So let's deliver because of the time or restrictions and any other thing, constraints, and then we can fix it. So this kind of prioritization is good as well, because as a quality engineers, we don't want to see anything being delivered with bugs or failures.
Yeah.
But as soon as we start talking to product people, they have all the insights. They can even see a small issue that is not blocking issue, but okay, this is important. No, and we need to fix that.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, I was looking, but this is not stopping anything, but this is an issue. But maybe for the product people, no, this is a huge issue. This is differently because I have this and that insight.
Yeah.
So it's good also to have this kind of, it's not good that we think and we deliver software with issues, but it's good to have the conversation with product people to understand what is the impact.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, of course. Urgency.
Of course. When you have something blocking that you know that will block the operation and the customer will stop, of course, we'll fix right away. But other things, just talk to product people. And it's hard when we say, okay, we are delivering things with bugs. It's really hard. We don't want this because the whole IT area is telling you all the time, we need to deliver without any issues.
Yes, like a professional pride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as we start learning a little bit more about it, talking more with the product people to understand this, it's become easier actually to deliver software, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's funny because you really made me reflect on kind of the gaming industry. When I'm thinking back, when I had a PS1, I would have this disc and then that would be that. And all the bugs that would be on that video game, it would be there forever.
Yeah.
Forever, basically. And nowadays, you download your software, you don't even have a disc anymore or an SD card or anything. It comes and as soon as it hits release, it already comes with an update patch. And then probably the next day, another update patch, because somehow with a certain button combination, you can clip through a wall and then you're out of bounds. And then, oh, they fix that with another patch. And things get released with more bugs. And I especially see it in the gaming industry, sometimes with too many bugs. But then immediately they hit you with upgrade patches where all of a sudden it looks like a really good game again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's tricky because when I play as well, sometimes I'm playing something. And I'm not seeing that issues.
Yeah.
And some players are.
Absolutely.
So it's exactly like this, I'm trying to combine with the what I'm saying about product. So maybe the product will say, okay, this issue, only 10% of the players will reach this point. So let's deliver and then we patch.
Yeah.
Because most of the users, most of the players won't reach that point. So it's fine for now.
Yeah.
So we need to have this balance as well, right? Of course, we don't like it when as soon as we see it, right? As a players, let's say.
Yeah.
But it's the time to market. We know everything.
Yeah. I think the hard part or the downside would be because people also estimate then their releases on that. Let's say if we're still taking the video game example, oh, we did that in the past, then yeah, we can still make these deadlines because everything looks similar.
Same, yeah.
The problem is the reality is not always similar. So then all of a sudden you might have to release or you might have a deadline, which is actually not feasible anymore. And then you can do two things, I think I've seen from engineering position. You can really do everything in your power, work day and night and try and make it happen. And then you still have that kind of make or break moment, or you have to push back and say, listen, I can't do it. If you want, go ahead, even though they cannot do it because they're not technical minded, but you have to have that conversation. And those conversations can be quite hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like exactly as you said, when you're asking for help, you did your homework, right? You said why, you said, this is the urgency. If we don't do this, then these are the consequences. That really helps when driving those conversations. But at the end of the day, I feel like with mature software development, with mature engineers, a skill is also putting your foot down and saying no sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And we have a lot of ways to do it. Like even during the interaction, let's say if you use sprints, for example, if you use Scrum, we know from Scrum that, okay, you can add as much as features as possible during this time frame, like can be 1 week, 2 weeks, etc.
Yeah.
But we know that we can prioritize one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And the PO can say, those are the real priorities from this iteration.
Yeah.
So let's focus on this first. If we focus on that first and we see problems, the PO knows that other features are not that important than that one.
Yeah.
So we can have even ways to try to avoid most of the problems of it, but it's still there. So the communication part, right? So this must happen with the product. And this is also communication problems, right? Because we have the deadlines, we have issues, and sometimes we don't know how to express when we are having issues and we see, okay, this product or this interaction for this feature cannot be delivered or won't be delivered on time. We don't know how to express the problem to the product people and say, okay, those are the implications, those are the risks, those are the problems. So in the end, actually, basically, almost everything is communication, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And I think the hard part is, and maybe this is a cop-out, a lot of communication skills, a lot of that kind of business language, that way of working, comes with experience, right? You have to have been in a team where there's a mature level of software development and delivery and milestones that get hit time and time after again, that you see, oh, there's a dialogue that's happening and we're not just executing. I feel like if you find yourself in a team that's just executing and that is bumping heads, and then that's a symptom of a dialogue that's not happening, and it needs to happen for things to progress, I feel like. Yeah. I really enjoyed this, man. This was a blast. Cool. Yeah, was this kind of what you expected coming into this?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was, because like this conversation is like going to different directions.
Yeah.
It's good because, we can talk about basically everything, right?
Awesome. Cool. Then I'm going to round it off here. If you're still listening, let us know in the comment section what you thought about this episode. And with that being said, thanks for listening. We'll see you in the next one.